is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Hello and welcome. Welcome to VOA Africa. Thank you for joining us. I'm Yehia Suhib in Washington, and here is what's coming up on Africa News Tonight.
Of returning to some semblance of normal, that our people turn a new page. It has not been lost on us. That in time of need, China's response has been swift, resulting in this donation being the first vaccine to reach our country.
That's Zimbabwe's co-vice president and health minister, Constantino Chiwenga, on receiving a donation of 200,000 doses of COVID-19 vaccines from China. Details coming up. Also, for the first time in nearly 5 years, Ebola has been found in West Africa. And former South African president Jacob Zuma, despite the risk of a jail term, says he will not testify this week in a corruption inquiry. All these and more ahead on Africa News Tonight. But first, our top story. For the first time in nearly 5 years, Ebola has been found in West Africa. The government of Guinea has confirmed a new outbreak in the southeastern city of Nzirakori, near the border with Liberia. In 2013, an Ebola outbreak in West Africa killed more than 11,000 people. The first cases in Guinea were found in Nzirakori. The news has alarmed some people in Guinea. Barry Mamadou, a resident of Conakry, spoke with the Associated Press yesterday about the outbreak. Speaking in French, Mamadou says he felt panic when he heard the news and he couldn't believe Ebola has returned to Guinea. He goes on to say that Africans are poor, and if diseases like Ebola or the coronavirus appear in Africa, only God can help them. Guinea's information minister, Amaru Sompare, told VOA's James Butty that 7 cases have been found and 3 of those patients have died. He outlined the steps the government is taking.
So they have decided to isolate all the suspect cases in the Nzirakori CTP to investigate on the cases to make sure that we don't have any other suspect case. And we need to identify also all the contact people. They have already sent an investigation mission in Nzirakori, in Gweke, and we have already put in place a kind of a coordination committee with all the technical partners and the World Health Organization.
Guinea, Sierra Leone, and Liberia were hit hardest by the Ebola outbreak that began in 2013. It was the first time the disease, which originates in animals such as bats, was found in those countries. Since then, officials say they have built up a health infrastructure to help limit the spread of the virus. Liberia's government already has put health officials on alert since the outbreak was found in Guinea. Sompare had this to say about the neighboring nation's efforts.
I mean, it's a normal decision from our neighbor because, you know, in Africa, people move all over the border because they have a lot of cultural and social activity together. So it is normal from the Liberian government to urge their medical staff and all the health system in Liberia to be ready in case of any suspect identified person in the Liberian country.
That was Guinea's information minister, Amare Sompare, who spoke with James Buddy, host of VOA's Daybreak Africa program. Former South African President Jacob Zuma says he will refuse to testify this week at the Commission of Inquiry into Corruption, despite the risk that he will be arrested and jailed. African National Congress, or ANC, stalwart Zuma led South Africa from 2009 to 2018. Evidence before the inquiry points to Zuma appointing allies to loot the state of billions. Darren Taylor has more.
The former president denies all the theft allegations. claiming he's the target of a vicious propaganda campaign led by his successor, Cyril Ramaphosa.
We are with President Zuma in the current situation that he's faced with.
Carl Niehaus is spokesperson for the Umkhonto weSizwe Military Veterans Association, which represents former ANC freedom fighters, including Zuma.
I do not know what you talk about when you talk about millions that have been looted. These are allegations. Allegations that have not been proved.
Niehaus says Zuma has no problem responding to those allegations before an inquiry that will be fair and just to him. The former president says he's convinced that Commission Head Judge Raymond Zondo is biased against him. ANC spokesperson Pule Mabe says party leaders are urging Zuma to be reasonable.
The constitution and the rule of law are sacrosanct, and continue to encourage those of our members who are invited to appear before the commission to do so.
Mabe is aware that Zuma's representatives in his home province of KwaZulu-Natal have suggested that jailing the former president will cause violence and possible loss of life.
Our structure in KwaZulu-Natal has already met with the President Jacob Zuma, and he has raised his own issues. Our own officials will be meeting with him. He did raise some of those challenges.
The ANC has previously said it will not be held to ransom by threats of violence from the Zuma camp. But judging from Mabe's comments, the party is treading lightly around this issue as it makes a last-ditch attempt to convince Zuma to testify.
To be preemptive at this stage might not be helpful. I ought to be seen to be loyal to decisions and undertakings of the National Executive Committee, that we give our own officials that space so that they could be able to understand what are the motivating reasons of such an intent.
Niehaus says his association will never abandon Zuma, as others in the ANC have.
He's been targeted for political purposes and mainly because of the commitment that he had shown to the poorest of the poor in South Africa and to radical economic transformation. We cannot allow a program of attack on President Zuma and others who are committed to the full liberation of the people of South Africa and to radical economic...
If Zuma doesn't appear this week, he could be fined, jailed for 6 months, or both. Law experts say the commission also has the authority to order that Zuma be imprisoned in 8-day increments until he agrees to give evidence. For VOA News, I'm Darren Taylor in Johannesburg.
The United Nations Children's Agency, UNICEF, says a troubling picture is emerging as aid organizations begin to reach those needing help in Ethiopia's Tigray region. Mavis Ochera in Juwaso in the Ashanti region of Ghana has more.
The fighting in Tigray has compounded pre-existing vulnerabilities in Ethiopia and neighboring countries. Even before the fighting began last November, the region was dealing with acute food insecurity, an invasion of desert locusts, droughts, and the COVID-19 pandemic. Between February 4th and 7th, a UNICEF team accompanied by the regional bureau head traveled from the Tigray capital, Mekelle, to the town of Shire in central Tigray. The team had 6 trucks filled with 122 tons of emergency supplies in the first UN mission to Shire since the conflict erupted in November 4th. Victor Chinyama, Chief of Communication for UNICEF Ethiopia, says there was a possibility of a major outbreak of diseases as health facilities have been looted or closed down and many children cannot get vaccinated. He says so far UNICEF has provided 655 metric tons of emergency supplies, therapeutic food, emergency health kit, and high energy biscuits at a cost of $2 million.
We've also been able to supply water, which is critical in a situation like this where the water systems have been destroyed and people are resorting to drink unsafe water. So in order to prevent the risk of diarrhea, in many cases we're having to truck in water to affected communities. Also, we provide what is called an emergency health kit. this is a kit that contains all the basic drugs and medicines that are needed to treat common childhood illnesses.
Kinyama says the International Organization for Migration estimates that 220,000 people are currently displaced in Shiri. He says although the urgent need of the people was food, the government and humanitarian agencies would not be able to see the full scale of the need until there is full access into the region. He says the exact number of children who have been separated from their families is currently unknown. Kinyama says, however, that among Tigray refugees who entered Sudan, about 300 children were found to have been without their families. Kinyama says children who have been displaced due to the conflict and needs to be reunited with their families will need support as they have gone through different kinds of trauma.
Inside Tigray itself, this is work that we will be doing together with our partners on the ground. And part of the challenge is that you need to put in place a social service workforce that is well-trained, that is skilled in the work of identifying children, many of whom have gone through different kinds of trauma, and working with these children so that they provided the psychosocial support that is needed, but also they are reunited with their families.
He says a few health centers in Shiri were functional as many were looted or destroyed and others have run out of medicines. Also, many health workers have fled.
We're thinking immediately that there needs to be immunization provided because there hasn't been. And obviously that amplifies the risks of measles and other communicable diseases. And this is something that has been acknowledged slowly. The restoration of clinics and health centers is beginning to happen, but side by side with the restoration of the physical infrastructure.
Kinyama says UNICEF has been ramping up support to local non-governmental organizations and government bodies such as the Regional Health Bureau and the Water and Sanitation Bureau to address crucial needs to communities. Reporting for VOA, this is Mavis Autry in Jaso in the Ashanti region.
You're listening to Africa News Tonight. I'm Yehi Suhibi in Washington, and here is a recap of our top stories. For the first time in nearly 5 years, Ebola has been found in West Africa. And former South African President Jacob Zuma, despite the risk of being jailed, says he will not testify this week in a corruption inquiry. Thanks for listening to VOA Africa. And for more news and information, visit our website at voanews.com. Suspected Islamists have killed 3 soldiers and 13 civilians in the Democratic Republic of Congo's Ituri province. Quoting statements from the army and rights groups, a Reuters report says the attackers opened fire when they entered the village of Ndalia in Ituri province yesterday and started burning down a Catholic church. It was not clear who carried out the attack, although army spokesman Julius Ngongo Shikudi blames the Allied Democratic Forces or ADF. Originally Muslim rebels from neighboring Uganda, the ADF has been active in eastern Congo since the 1990s. According to UN figures, the group killed about 850 people last year in the eastern Congo region. Congo's eastern borderlands with Uganda, Rwanda, and Burundi are home to some 100 different militias, many of them remnants of its brutal civil wars that officially ended in 2003. Islamic State has claimed responsibility for several suspected ADF attacks in the past, but UN experts have not found any direct link between the two groups. Zimbabwe's government says vaccination of frontline workers shall commence this week after the first COVID-19 from China arrived. But some critics worry about the apparent lack of transparency in the vaccination program. Reporter Kudzanai Musenge brings us more.
Zimbabwe's Vice President Constantino Chiwenga who doubles as the country's health minister, was all smiles at Robert Mugabe International Airport talking to journalists after a plane carrying the doses of the Sinopharm vaccine landed on at the break of dawn Monday.
This is a timely donation given the recent ravages and tragedies that visited our nation through COVID-19 pandemic. We received this vaccine as a gleam of hope to the nation that finally we may be on the verge of returning to some semblance of normalcy. That our people turn a new page. It has not been lost on us that in time of need, China's response has been swift, resulting in this donation being the first vaccine to reach our country.
However, over the weekend, an official from Zimbabwe College of Public Health Physicians told VOA that the Sinopharm vaccine was not effective against the South African variant of COVID-19, which has spread into Zimbabwe. He hoped Zimbabwe would quickly get vaccines under the COVAX and the African Union facilities so that the country has other known vaccines that have clear data. On Monday, China's ambassador to Zimbabwe, Guo Shaoxin, dismissed any doubts about the Sinopharm vaccine when asked by VOA.
No, I'm not a scientist, so I do not want to make unprofessional comments. But I would like to say the safety, the effectiveness of the Chinese vaccine is already proven.
Dr. Ilopi Nimele Sibanda is a professor of immunology at the University of Zimbabwe's College of Health Sciences. He says he's optimistic the Sinopharm vaccine will help Zimbabwe following the recent spike of COVID-19 cases in the country.
Any vaccine is better than no vaccine. That is the bottom line. In terms of efficacy, we will only know once it has been used. We don't know what it will be in our own setting. We did not know about the Oxford vaccine and how effective it would be in South Africa until they actually started vaccinating people in South Africa. And people will always have issues about whether the vaccine works or doesn't work.
Zimbabwe's government says the Sinopharm vaccine has an efficacy rate of between 76% and 86%. On Monday, Acting Health Secretary Dr. Robert Mudgirandima said Zimbabwe will conduct trials of Sinopharm this week before starting a nationwide free and voluntary vaccination program. Zimbabwe's government says it plans to immunize 60% of the country's estimated 14 million people, hoping to achieve herd immunity. Columbus Mavungam for VOA News, Harare, Zimbabwe.
In Malawi, healthcare workers have come under attack several times recently while trying to bury victims of COVID-19 without spreading the coronavirus. Healthcare workers now want a review of guidelines that say they should handle the burials. Lamek Masina reports from Blantyre.
The incident happened Tuesday in Njingi district in central Malawi, where villagers threw stones at an ambulance carrying the dead body in an effort to force the healthcare workers to release the body for viewing. The pandemonium forced the health workers to return the body to the mortuary. This came a week after villagers in Zomba district in southern Malawi chased away healthcare workers who had come to bury a COVID-19 victim. They too claimed that their loved one died of other illnesses, not COVID-19, and demanded to bury the body themselves. Shouts Meza is chairperson for the Human Resources for Health Coalition. He says if the attacks continue, the healthcare workers will refuse to bury any more bodies.
Because of the harassment and the abuse, we always live in fears. If the situation continues, all of us health workers, we will withdraw ourselves from the service of escorting the remains of the dead bodies of our brothers and sisters and in the communities.
Families have argued they see no reason they can't bury COVID-19 victims after healthcare workers disinfect the bodies. They say they believe the body is safe from coronavirus after disinfection. But Smeza says the healthcare workers are only following guidelines on how to bury the victims of COVID-19.
The guidelines still demand that the health workers should support in the escorting and burying of the remains for the safety of the public. So maybe the direction now we need to do is, to work on the guidelines that we have at hand, review them. For that to be carried out, we need then to involve the community themselves so that they can appreciate the scourge.
In the initial months of COVID-19 pandemic, experts warned that dead bodies were infectious, like bodies of those killed by the Ebola virus. More recently, however, the U.S. Centers for Disease Control issued a burial guide that said it is believed there is a little risk of getting COVID-19 from a dead body. The guide said the coronavirus, which causes COVID-19, spreads mainly through droplets produced when a person coughs, sneezes, or talks. Malawi has seen a surge in COVID-19 cases since November. Health authorities put the current average number of daily infections at 300 cases compared to 10 during the first wave of the pandemic. Lamek Masina for VOA News, Blantyre.
With Uganda delaying plans to reopen schools, parents living near the Kenya border are sending their children to Kenyan schools. Katrin Nampi reports from Kampala.
Since the reopening of Kenyan schools in January, at least four Kenyan school buses are seen crossing the Uganda-Kenya border, each day picking up and dropping off students from Ugandan border districts. The children are mainly those in lower primary classes. Geoffrey Kaombulu is one of the parents opting to send his children to Kenyan schools.
Buses from Kenya come and pick them as early as 6 in the morning and are taken to Kenya for study. And they bring them in the evening as the sun sets at around 7. They bring them back to their houses. Then in the morning again, they come and pick them.
Uganda closed schools in March last year to reduce the spread of COVID-19. Many parents, however, feel the school's reopening is long overdue. Child advocates say the long absence from schools has made children vulnerable to abuse such as child labor, sexual abuse, early marriages and pregnancies. Rather than keep their children idle, parents are willing to pay higher tuition fees on the Kenyan side. Stephen Ajambo, a resident of Busia Border District, has three children in Kenyan schools.
Many of these parents are doing it because of convenience, to keep this child in school rather than just keeping him out to remain redundant. Many of them are being taken them there, especially in this primary, middle primary and so on, simply to buy time as they wait for schools to reopen.
Uganda's Ministry of Education has warned that parents are risking their children's lives by enrolling them in Kenyan schools. The World Health Organization reports Kenya is recording more than 100 COVID-19 cases a day, while Uganda is confirming under 50 new cases a day. Janet Museveni is Uganda's education minister.
We can't stop them, but if they take their children to where they may get a problem, they'll have themselves to blame.
Currently, only final year students are back to school in Uganda, but the government has released plans to phase in reopening for other learners starting in March. This is Catherine Nambi for VOA News in Kampala.
And that wraps up this edition of African News Tonight. I'm Yehiz Wuhib in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voanews.com. On behalf of our producer, Nadia Taha, thank you again for tuning in and choosing the Voice of America.